It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blake Corum does it again. 47 yards. The little big man.
Oh, man. The little big man had a big-time day. 243 rushing yards for Blake Corum in Michigan's 34-27 win over Maryland. Most rushing yards by any Wolverine in a Big Ten conference game since all the way back in 1995. And no surprise to see that Blake Corum has earned some Big Ten awards after that performance. He is your co-offensive player of the week. 30 carries, 243, and a couple of tutties. He shares the award with Tanner Morgan, who led Minnesota to an easy win at Michigan State. Morgan, 23 of 26, 268. That's right, as many touchdowns as incompletions in that Gopher win on the road. And with that, welcome you inside this Monday press conference, Big Ten Live edition. I am Rick Pizzo. So much coming up as we have now completed four consecutive weeks, and we had the week zero games to start the year as well. But this is the first time we will have nothing but conference play inside the Big Ten. Seven matchups featuring 14 teams, many of whom's head coaches you will hear coming up today. Jim Harbaugh and Mel Tucker, very different results this past weekend. We'll also hear from Jeff Brohm and PJ Fleck, each team winning. The Boilermakers barely, Minnesota handily. Wisconsin comes off the loss to Ohio State. We'll hear from Paul Chryst. How will Tom Allen respond after Indiana's disappointing loss to Cincinnati? Could say the same thing about Greg Schiano after Rutgers falls to Iowa, and Pat Fitzgerald, whose team has lost three consecutive games. Brett Bielema set to make his return to Wisconsin. We'll hear from the Illinois head man as well. But we will start with the Michigan Wolverines, unbeaten now at 4-0. By far their toughest test against Maryland. Held on to win 34-27 thanks to that run game. Blake Corum, an efficient J.J. McCarthy, and the defense made just enough plays. Now Michigan gets set to battle with Iowa coming up this weekend. It is on Fox, a big noon kickoff, and then Indiana the next weekend. Back-to-back road games for the Wolverines before they return home against Penn State and enjoy their bye this week following that Nittany Lion game. They'll be off on October 22nd. Let's head to Ann Arbor now as we listen in to head coach Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, he's off to a really good start, a really good player. It's great to see him be challenged and to step up and make plays and continue to do so.
Stand left, Isaiah.
What have you seen from Iowa's defense on tape, and what are the challenges it presents your offense?
Yeah, it really goes back to the early 80s with Norm Parker. Coaching at Michigan State, defensive coordinator there, defensive coordinator for 30 some years. That's where this defense originates. And he happened to coach a defensive back by the name of Phil Parker at Michigan State. And then in 1999, Kirk Ferentz went to Iowa, hired Norm Parker as a defensive coordinator, and Phil Parker as a secondary coach. That system's been in place since 1999. Phil Parker was the secondary coach there for 13 years and then took over as the defensive coordinator and has been ever since. And it's a system, it's a way of a way of playing. It's the Parker way. And it's really good. Everybody knows what to do. Everybody's playing the proper leverage, the proper technique, the proper fundamentals at all times. Opportunistic, the challenges that it presents are, I mean, if you are inaccurate with a throw, overthrow, underthrow, tip ball, I mean, it's highly likely that it's going to result into a turnover if you're not as sound as you can possibly be, then you know you're in for a rough one. But this scheme is flawless. Everybody where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there, playing the technique they're supposed to be there. So the challenge is it makes you on offense, you know, be really tight, you know. Not the time to lighten up. It's the time to, you know, tighten up in every aspect of you know, our offense's technique and fundamentals and alignments and assignments. So it's been 48 hours of looking at that and looking at every possible way that we can improve ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Walter Payton, Marshall Faulk, you coached Frank Gore. Not to compare Blake to those guys, but I'm wondering the themes that you saw with those three guys and some of the themes that you're seeing emerge in Blake's career at his time in Michigan.
There's an old saying in football that a running back who can miss somebody by the narrowest of margins is a unbelievable talent. Now, Blake can get so close to a defender, would-be tackler, within inches, and then make the slight move where somebody that close doesn't even touch him. Some backs will make the cut a yard away or 2 yards away. Blake Corum gets to the point where he can smell their breath and then make the slight six-inch cut, you know, missed by the narrowest of margins. It's incredible. And the vision, the low center of gravity, you know, players talk about having just a hard time finding him. And the real key to the success is just how close he can get to a defender and then miss by the narrowest of margins.
On the left, Aaron.
Jim, do you anticipate having Donovan back this week? And if not, how do you shore up the run game so Blake doesn't get 30 carries?
We'll see. We'll see as the week transpires. Answering both those questions.
But. Austin?
Jim, any update on Eric Allen when you think he'll be back?
No. No, I think the really good running backs, the great running backs, I mean, a running back like Blake that has that kind of I think they crawl out of the crib with it.
Yeah, so Michigan hasn't won in Iowa since 2005. You're obviously there in 2016, close loss. So what makes Kinnick Stadium such a difficult place to play?
As they say, top five teams go to die. I think the biggest thing is just how good the team is. I mean, and then you turn on the offensive tape, and yeah, I mean it's a Kirk Ferentz coached offense. I mean everything is detailed, everything's precise, same fundamentals. They just get so good at what they're doing that they beat you with the execution. You know, it's wide zone, it's tight zone, it's play action, off the uh, It's boots and nakeds, and you know, they're just, they just out fundamentally, they out technique you, and they aimed out execute you. So same thing. I mean, you can't have blown coverages. You got to have you got to be in the right technique about it. Got to be in the right gap. You know, you've got to be just as good. You got to match that execution. So and that. Great environment that they have at Kinnick Stadium, but I think it's more the team that's on the field, and they produce one that's really good every single year.
Angelique, I have two. How is Kate McNamara and Keegan? Will he be available this week?
Yeah, they're progressing. No, I mean, it's not for me to stand up here on a Monday and update everybody's physical condition. I mean, you're welcome to ask them yourself.
But I did have a second question.
I don't have the crystal ball for will they play Saturday to be able to answer that question.
A lot of firsts for JJ, first start in a Big Ten game, now first start on the road in a Big Ten game. How different is that? How do you prepare him for that experience at Kinnick?
Yeah, same way we're going to at all the positions, really. I mean, look to, get fundamental football, going through the progressions, going through the drops, the ball handling, making sure that, we're as detailed and as fundamentally sound as we can possibly be going into this game.
All right, Andrew.
With Iowa's defense, lineage you discussed, is that just something you know, or does studying it like help you prepare for even Saturday's game, like the wrinkles over time?
I've been aware of it for a long time and yeah, have studied it.
On the left, Aaron.
Jim, you've gone up against this Iowa defense a couple of times now in the last couple of years. How well equipped do you think this offense is to handling it?
We'll see. I mean, a lot of things to, it's good that we won the game, but there's a lot of things to coach, from our last game. So we'll see how our players respond to that coaching and see how, all the areas that we can make better, fix, even how well we do that. Probably have a better feel for that as the week goes on. I predict that we can. I think, fixable things, just going to require, taking the coaching and continuing to go practice it and then being able to, once you've practiced, be able to do that in the game day, in the game day environment. In a hostile stadium, in a loud stadium, and all those things it's going to take some work. If you want to get better at something, you just work a little bit harder at it, and there's definitely things for us to narrowly focus in on this week.
Reiner?
And Jim, how has Jesse prepared for this portion of the schedule where you're playing teams that have seen the framework of this defense firsthand?
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, well, you guys are playing teams now that have seen the defense.
Oh, yeah.
How has Jesse prepared for that and kind of accounted for that?
there's ways to make things look like something, and then you're actually doing something else. So Jesse's prepared for that and been implementing that.
Isaiah?
What do you feel like the pass rush needs to do to take that next step?
there's an area of focus there, and things that we'll be coaching this week. As we talk to the players, I'm not going to go through every single one of them on offense, each position by position, and. Yeah, that'll be an area of emphasis. is an area of emphasis.
Got time for a few more. We'll start with Austin.
What do you think has been the recipe for the consistency on special teams?
The recipe has been players with a great desire to train themselves for the positions that are in. They are in. They take tremendous pride. It's really important to us here as a football team. And then, you know, a lot of credit to Jay Harbaugh, and to the special team staff, Brad Banta, JB. A lot of time, a lot of man hours, and a great pride that's taken by the players. I mean, it's been really good. Going back to, years now, a lot of time on task. I mean, I guess pretty, in some way similar to the Iowa defense, or the Iowa offense. Just that. It's been a consistency in the coaching. There's been a consistency in the mindset and the pride that our players take, and getting really good on special teams. And seeing a lot of our players that have gone on to make NFL rosters because how they played on special teams and their special teams readiness and preparedness. There's so many examples that our players have for that. And hey, if one man can do it, many have observed, they watched, and now their goal is to surpass, what they've already seen there. There's a real standard, all those things.
Angelique?
Jen, I was just curious about Demetrius Walker, what he's meant to you, what he's meant to this program.
Yeah, it was just an instant bond there, click, with our team. The love that he gives out, you feel that, and you want to give that back. And our players, they got big hearts. It's a very spiritual team that we have. I mean, in a lot of ways, it came to me that, the most spiritual place maybe in this town or in this community campus is right here in Schimbeckler Hall, in terms of how many players are just so rock solid in their faith. And I also want to honor Robbie Emery, who's our team chaplain. But specifically with Michi, I mean, our team, they have an open heart for others. They don't just care about themselves. They really care about others. And it's been he's just somebody that you meet and just exudes a spirituality, a love that you're drawn to, and it was instant. It was that instant, click with all of us and our team. And we want him around. We want him to get the treatment that will give his life more longevity. And if we can help make that quality of life better, we want to do that. That's just how our team felt.
Last question, Chris.
Coach Yabi, can you talk about his progress, where he's progressed the most, and is he one of those guys you can envision can help you in that pass rush?
I do, and he has, and he keeps progressing. He didn't get here till the middle of August. There's always, there's learning the defense, there's calls, there's subtleties. Already talked about a defense that's been in place for 25 years, whatever, a long time. But Yabi's that talented, that he can come in, and he's that smart. He's picked up, most all of the defense. And there's you know, every week there's more and more calls that he knows and we can play him, and it's just down to a couple, just a few really that you know, that he's, you know, still mastering. I do believe you know, players love him, we love him, and you're gonna see him in there more and more, you know, because of the, you know, just time on task, understanding, you know, his position, his 1/11th in the system.
Is it kind of similar for Derek Moore as well as a freshman?
Yeah, same as.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And so Michigan, not just going on the road this weekend, but going to an awfully tough place to play at Kinnick Stadium. As a matter of fact, Jim Harbaugh calling Kinnick Stadium the place where top five teams go to die because of how fundamentally solid Kirk Ferentz's teams have been. Just down the road in East Lansing, it was not a solid performance for Michigan State this past week. In all Minnesota, as a matter of fact, 34-7 is the final. Mel Tucker's defense has allowed 73 points over the past 2 weeks, both losses first at Washington and then back home against the Gophers. It is time to reset and try to bounce back. Another tough one on the road this weekend against Maryland. Let's take you to East Lansing now and listen in to the head Spartan.
So thanks everyone for being here today. Really appreciate it. I was able to, last time we talked, said I need to watch the film. We were able to do that, and so there are a few takeaways. You know, offensively, ball security is critically important. The turnover margin is the biggest indicator of winning and losing. And in the present time, we're on the negative side of turnover margin for the season. So that also is reflective of our record. We need to create more explosive plays on offense. We need to sustain drives. And we need to score points. We're really close in the run game. Defensively, our pre-snap alignments need to improve. We need to do a much better job of stopping the run on a consistent basis. And our tackling needs to improve. We need to be tighter in coverage, man and zone. We need to get pressure on the quarterback on all downs. We need to get off the field on third down. We need to take the ball away. Again, that's turnover margin. So I'm excited about the opportunity. I'm really optimistic and determined is how I feel at the moment. You know, Maryland's a very well-coached team. They have some really good players. They're explosive on offense, a really good scheme on defense. So, you know, absolutely, we'll be challenged. And so, you know, preparation is the key for us. But I know you have some important questions for me, so we can just get at it.
Mel, that's a long list of things need to be changed to work on. How do you do something like that in short order, not a long-term fix, but we know Maryland can throw it, and the schedule after that doesn't get any easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you fix it? We have some plans to do that. Exactly the specifics of how we're going to do that, I would care not to share them at this time. But, you know, that's what we're doing right now.
No, right. I was wondering. So on Saturday, you said you'd kind of been down this road before when you were asked about scheme versus personnel. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that and just where you were at and what you were referring to.
Yeah, we need to make some scheme adjustments, and then we're always evaluating personnel, and, you know, we'll do that when necessary.
Thank you.
So we'll have to see what that looks like once we get out there.
Now I'm curious, when you go through all those things, mm-hmm. and you're going through them with the players, and you see how the last couple of weeks have gone, mm-hmm. where's the mindset, but the mood or the mental mm-hmm. approach of this team? Where do you think they are in terms of that? Are they down or any of those sort of things?
I would say determined and optimistic, you know, because we're capable of correcting these things, and the players know it.
You mentioned about the pass rush in particular, and that's been it was a deep area coming in, but that top layer has kind of been hit with some injuries, I guess. How much do you think that's affecting it right now, and how much of it is the development of getting some of those younger guys up to speed to the point where they are comfortable and just replacing?
Yeah, it's a next man up situation, which, you know, we've talked about before, and you know, that's just what it is. Injuries are part of the game. From a rush and coverage working together standpoint, we can do a better job in coverage. We get them to hold the ball a little bit longer, and because we're close on some rushes, we've identified some guys that they can win one-on-one, and we have to, from a scheme standpoint, get those guys in one-on-one situations so they can win. And then also, you know, there's times when the coverage is there and the rush isn't there, you know. And so we have to have rush and coverage working together, coordinated rush, whether it's pressures, you know, blitzes, or, you know, four-man rush. And that's going to be important. That's going to be important, especially this week with coordinated pass rush, because this quarterback, if you're not coordinated in your pass rush lanes, you know, he'll pull it down and he'll take off with it, you know, inside and outside. And, you know, we've seen that all year with the teams we face. If you're not coordinated in pass rush, the quarterback will pull it down and he'll take off running.
Matt, right here, it's been tough sledding with the run game the last couple mm-hmm. weeks. I think you mentioned off the top, yeah, I think you said that you're close. Mm-hmm. Just what do you see in there? What fixes sort of have to happen? And are you confident that those fixes are, you know, available mm-hmm. or possible?
Yeah, we have room to run. In instances, we got to make sure we hit the hole. And then we need more push and more strain on the line, more movement. And then also with the tight ends and receivers, continue to strain, you know, because it takes the line and the tight ends, the receivers and the backs, and making sure we're getting in and out of the right plays. Then score differential is a part of it as well. You know, we get down big early, and it becomes a score situation, and it becomes a race against time, and running the ball is really, you know, really limited options there because of the time in the game and the score differential. You can see in the last couple games, you know, especially like in the second half, we were able to get the run game going. But, you know, we don't score, and then the score differential gets, you know, so large, and then, you know, the running game is pretty much, it becomes a two-minute situation for the rest of the game.
Mel, how do you get a defense to have a swagger? Like a year ago, even when they were giving up yards, it seemed like there was a little something mm-hmm. to them, an edge to mm-hmm. them, and I'm wondering how you get guys to feel a certain way about themselves like that.
Yeah, we just coach it into them, and then gaining confidence in practice, you know, by doing it fast in practice, and making plays on a consistent basis in practice. Swagger is a I'm not sure exactly what the definition of that is, but I would I would think that it's, you know, playing with confidence because of demonstrated ability, you know, in practice, and then starting fast in games.
Mel, you've talked often, including Saturday, about blocking out the noise. How tough is that to do this week, and what's your responsibility as a leader to kind of circle the wagons? Because around here, with the success you've had, when you lose two games in a row, everyone thinks the world's ending. The sink is shipping. The season's over. How do you keep that from filtering in, and what is your responsibility this week to, as I said, circle the wagons?
For me, it's not difficult to block out the noise. I think it's more difficult for the players, just because of experience. So we talk about it. We talked about it immediately after the game in the locker room, and then we talked about it again today. And we'll continue to talk about that. But it's important now what exactly we say how to do that, and I'll just have to keep that in house.
Now, I'm going to ask a little bit about Peyton. Obviously you have a lot of issues going on right now, but he struggled a little bit last week. Do you think there's times when he sees maybe the running game's not going, we're not sustaining drives, does he start putting pressure on himself and maybe try and do too much at times? Or I guess I'm just trying to figure out where he's at in terms of that, because he seems frustrated at times out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a high level competitor, that wants to do things right and wants to execute and wants to win, and so we have to play. He has to do a better job in some areas, in some situations in the game. We have to play better around him, offense, defense, and special teams. But I'm very determined. To help this team get better, and I know that he is as well.
Mel, you mentioned that, their personnel in Maryland on offense. So I think we know their quarterback. We know they got some good receivers that have been there a little bit. Like, scheme-wise, plan-wise, what sort of stuff do they do that allow those guys to be successful attacking defenses through the air? What are some things that you're noticing that just they do really well?
Yeah, so Locks is a great football mind. He's an excellent coach. He's an excellent leader. But he's very creative on offense, and he knows how to get the ball to his playmakers. And he also believes in running the football as well. So, he's really good at, game plan schemes. There's things that they do every week, but they're always going to have something game specific to attack a perceived weakness. And so he does a really good job with that. Yeah, really, Locks is one of the best.
Did you guys cross over at Alabama at all there?
No, we haven't worked together, but I know him very well. He's I consider him a friend.
When you look at Berger and Broussard, you started Broussard. I'm wondering behind the genesis behind him over Berger at the outset. Mm-hmm. And what do those two need to do differently, or is it more on the line to kind of free them up a little bit better?
Yeah, well, Berger was banged up coming out of the previous game, and so it took us a little while to get him ready for the game, during the week. But like I said, hit the hole, run hard, protect the football, and then we got to do a better job around him, so we can have room in the run game.
You mentioned starting fast back here, Mel, with the cameras. You mentioned starting fast. Can that start with something as simple as maybe receiving the kickoff to start the game if given the chance?
Yeah, I mean, like a kickoff return is like the first play of offense. Like a kickoff coverage is the first play of defense, so absolutely.
And then last week you were talking about you changing stuff by watching a continuous copy of the film. Have you done anything like that this week or changed anything up leading up to Maryland?
Yeah, we're going to do some things differently to change the stimulus, in the meetings and in practice, but we didn't watch the continuous copy this morning. That's a sometime thing, not every time thing.
Mel, in the stats era, Michigan State's never started the first four games without an interception. Mm-hmm. How much of that is the defensive backs aren't close enough to get one, or are there other factors that we're not seeing?
Yeah, all of the above. All of the above. But, the past is not necessarily predictive of the future, unless you don't change the behavior. So we need to change the behavior to get a better result.
And that was 2 weeks in a row with only six plays in the first quarter. How much do you think that had to do with your defense not being able to get stops because they didn't get off the field?
Like I said, third down. You get a team at third down, you got to get off the field. And we got them at third down, but then we didn't get off the field, and then they sustained drives, they eat the clock, they ultimately end up scoring. Your offense is sitting on the bench. And then when we get the ball to the offense, when they do have an opportunity, then we have to sustain drives, convert, drive the ball, and score. So, but yeah, the job of the defense is to get the ball back to the offense, you know, as quickly as possible, as much as possible, and, you know, score or set up a score. And so we're not doing that. We haven't done that.
As a coach, what's the challenge of attacking that list of improvements that you started with, but also trying to focus on your guys and making sure they're mentally, they're there? You said they're determined, but, you know, those are two separate areas that obviously fall under you.
Yeah, it's a all hands on deck 24/7 challenge. So, you know, that's what we do as coaches. You know, it's a lot easier to coach guys when everything's going well, but when adversity hits, that's when where the rubber meets the road. And so I have a lot of confidence in our staff, you know, and also our players. You know, it's about how you respond to adversity, and I'm determined and optimistic because of the response that I'm seeing from our staff and from the players.
Mel, you just kind of hinted at it, but what is your confidence level with the staff right now?
High.
Mel, you talked before the season about having guys in different categories as the season broke, like guys who weren't ready, guys who were ready, guys who you'd have a plan for who might be ready down the road. As you get into the season, do you reassess that with some of the youngest guys and see where different guys might be?
Yeah, we do that daily. Yep. And so if you see a guy on the field that maybe you didn't see out there the previous weeks, you know, that may be a reflection of that evaluation.
Hey, Mel, you know, coming into the season, you talked a lot about this whole transformation of the program from being a coach-led team to a player-led team. So, you know, during these last couple of difficult weeks, what have you seen from this? Has it been a player-led team, or has it been the coaches having to kind of pick them up?
Yeah, I mean, it's I see the players really stepping up, you know, and I mean, I'm seeing that happen, which is important. And so we always need more. But I don't feel like it's the coaches dragging the players through it, which is gives me optimism.
Would you be able to provide an example, maybe, of one of these that you've seen with the players, or is that an in-house thing?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we have a defensive player that you know, had all the defensive players in on their day off yesterday. You know, watching the game all together, going over every play, going over the calls, the communication, you know, the assignments, you know, things like that. That was something that was not directed by the coach, by the coaches. The same thing happens on offense as well, yeah.
Obviously, Xavier hasn't been able to play the last 3 weeks. Yeah. I think there was a period of time, I don't remember, second half maybe, where we saw him out on the field talking with the guys. I guess what is his level of involvement been, even when he's not able to contribute on the field?
Yeah, he's able to get more involved now because he's more mobile. You know, he was on crutches there for a minute, so he had to keep a distance just from a safety standpoint. But now he's more mobile, and he can get a little bit closer to the action. And that's what you're seeing.
Any questions?
All right, thank you. Thanks for showing up. Thanks for your questions, and we'll see you in Maryland. Go Green.
Your reigning Big Ten Coach of the Year thinks a lot about the man who he will match wits with this weekend. Tucker saying of Maryland head coach Mike Loxley, who he considers a friend, he's one of the best at putting together an offensive game plan to attack a perceived weakness.
Morgan is going to step up and run it. How about Tanner Morgan? Here's Ibrahim doing what he does best. Minnesota, in dominant fashion, gets their first win in East Lansing since 2006.
Not sure if dominant is a strong enough word. Tanner Morgan, at quarterback for Minnesota, had just as many touchdown passes as he did incompletions. Mo Ibrahim went over 100 yards for a 13th consecutive game, and the Gophers only gave up the shutout with second and third string defenders in the final minutes, in a completely one-sided affair in East Lansing. Now PJ Fleck and company take their 4-0 record back home to host Purdue before having their bye week and then heading back on the road in back-to-back weeks against Illinois and Penn State on October the 15th and the 22nd. Lots to look forward to for the head Gopher as we head to Minneapolis. And listen in, here is PJ Fleck.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. I'm just going to start the press conference first and foremost saying happy birthday yesterday, Daniel House. Yesterday, happy birthday. Second, at 8 a.m. this morning, Dinkytown Athletes was launched, which is incredibly important for the future of our program, important for college football and all student athletes. A collective was formed to support our student athletes through the ever-changing landscape and world of college athletics as it continues to move. Derek Burns, who's a former player here, and Robert Gagg, whose son is actually a member of our men's basketball team as a GA, are leading this NIL collective. I've met with both of them, and I can't tell, I can't say this enough, how important this is. So calling on all of our donors, our boosters, our fans, our alumni, anybody who supports our program to really look at this collective. It's a call to action to really support our student athletes here at the University of Minnesota in this ever-changing landscape of college athletics as we keep moving forward. So I can't urge people enough to be involved, and this is a wonderful way to be involved, again, with the ever-changing landscape of college athletics, as I keep saying. It's incredibly important as we get into the roster management, building a roster of the future of especially college football into our job of what we need to be able to do as we keep moving forward to create the most elite experience here at the University of Minnesota that we can possibly provide our student athletes on the field, off the field, academic, athletically, socially, and spiritually as we continue to do that. So with that, we'll open up for questions.
PJ, defensively, you guys disguised quite a bit at the line of scrimmage. What was the game plan with that, and how did you feel like it was most effective?
Yeah, well, first of all, I thought we had a really good defensive game plan. You know, I had to keep some things in front of us, you know, because, we had one time where I think Jaden Reed goes by on a post and, you know, they overthrow it. But that was one of the rare times they went over our head. We knew that we had to be able to change the picture for Peyton. He's a really good quarterback. That was our only chance is to find a way to be able to make the picture change and move people around. And I thought our guys, it's one thing about moving people around. It's another thing, as we said, of changing the call. And then it's another thing of actually executing exactly where you're supposed to be. Where's your landmarks? Where's your drop? Where are you supposed to be? Where are your eyes? So our players deserve a lot of credit for executing that. But just like every week, that's what we keep talking about. This game plan is completely different from the one at Colorado. Colorado's completely different from Western Illinois. Western Illinois is completely different from New Mexico State's. It's taking that one game championship season. How are we going to be able to put our players in the best position to be successful for this particular week? And then how can we practice that all the way through the week so they can execute the game plan the best they possibly can and come to as close as mastering as they possibly can? So I thought Coach Rossi and the defense staff did a really good job of that this week. And the players did a really good job executing it. And again, what was it good enough? How good was it? It was good enough to be 1-0 against Michigan State, period.
PJ, given how much you guys focused on blocking out the outside noise and all that stuff, how do you feel about being in the top 25 this week?
Well, I think any time that happens, that's good for the brand of the University of Minnesota, period. It's good for our president. It's good for our admissions. It's good for everything. We are not the most important thing on this campus, at this university, or even in this town. I made that very clear. But we can be a front porch to all the things we've talked about. To getting more and more students to be attracted to the University of Minnesota, enrollments up. You get even even higher quality students to come here that continue to do medical research, change the world, do things like that. And we're talking about a game that allows you to be able to have that type of exposure, you know, especially when you get nationally recognized. Now, that doesn't mean anything necessarily inside of our program. We have a lot of guys who have had that happen before. They've been there. They understand what it, how the external message will get louder, but the internal message has to be, you know, the loudest. Period. And they're going to hear it. It's just about the difference between hearing and listening. You know, we have a job to do, and this is a perfect example of homecoming. I always give my homecoming quote. You know, we're not in charge of the punch. We're not in charge of the streamers. We're not in charge of what to match our dress with our suit of our date. We're not in charge of any of that, right? I mean, we're in charge of taking care of a football game and playing our best football to be 1-0. That's it. And it's the same thing with when you're talking about, you know, people recognizing you from the outside. I mean, you hear it, but they've got to listen to the inside way louder. And we've got a lot of guys who have been through this before. This isn't the first time that's happened, fortunately for us, that they've earned the opportunity to have that happen multiple times in the last however many years. So, you know, they know how to handle that. But, again, good for all those outside reasons that we talked about. Our job is to find a way to play our best in a one-game championship season.
Is your offense getting the best of both worlds in terms of being able to control the clock but also getting some pretty substantial chunk plays?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's helped us. You know, I think third down has helped us. You know, I think you look at the third down statistics, and again, I mean, we have a third and 21. I think it was against Colorado and rip out a run, you know, for almost 40 yards. We have a bunch of third. We have a few third and longs this past game. We convert them, keeps the drives alive. But it comes down to execution, period. Whether it's first and second down, if you got third and longs, you're not doing a really good job on first and second down. We've had a penalty or here that set us back. We've been able to execute it. Defense got off. It's just running our offense, taking what the defense gives you, everything setting up one or the other. But, you know, we just have to find a way to continue. I sound like a broken record. Just execute the game plan and take what the defense gives us and be efficient. You know, and I think that's what this team has done up to this point is just be efficient. That doesn't promise you you're going to continue to be efficient. Nothing's guaranteed. You have to continue to earn everything that you get. And that's what I love about this team. They want to do that. They work incredibly hard. I've told you since January what type of DNA this team has. But when you're in the Big Ten, I mean, every single week, every team gets tested, no matter who you are. It's not just us. It's not just Ohio State, not just Purdue. It's not just Michigan State, not just Michigan. Every week, you're dealing with 18 to 28. You know, I said that jokingly in my press conference, but you're still dealing with young people. You're getting tested every single week with a lot from outside, external, internal, and you got to do everything you possibly can to you know, just continue to focus back on what are our beliefs on offense, what are our beliefs on defense, and what is it going to take to be 1-0, and keep them focused on that.
P.J. Tanner was just named Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week. What are the things that he's been doing to play at such a high level?
Well, you know, I used that quote the other day, or not the quote, but I told you the story how we actually watched Jerry Rice talk about being interviewed. He was being interviewed, and he's talking about the mastery part, and somebody asked him, when did you know you mastered the wide receiver position? He goes, I never mastered the wide receiver position. He goes, in fact, I still haven't. And the interviewers were perplexed. They didn't get it. Tanner has – I'm not comparing Tanner to Jerry Rice. I want to make sure that's very clear. But what I'm saying is that mindset Tanner has that I'll never get there. It's not about the end. It's about the journey. And he constantly wants to get better. He wants to make everybody else around him better. He has – that's what's going to make him an amazing husband, amazing father, an amazing dad, an amazing coach, an amazing player, and a person that you want in your life because he's going to constantly make himself better, which inevitably is going to make you better and bring the best out in you. And that's what Tanner does really well. And I think sometimes we take that for granted. I'm not saying we internally, but when people look at Tanner, they don't see all that every single day. They see him out there on Saturdays. See him throw a pass here and there, you know, is it complete or incomplete? You know, did he scramble? Did he get the first down or not? But we see him as the person he is. And I just keep seeing that getting better and better and better. And he's just super competitive, you know, which is what you want in a leader.
Seems like a formation and alignment tweaks are getting your offense good matchups. How much are those things helping your playmakers?
Well, I think that's what every coach does, no matter what team they have. You know, you're doing everything you can to find an advantage based on, you know, plays, alignments, formations. But for us, formationally, you know, I mean, people always talk about how simple we are, and I get that. You know, we've been doing this 10 years. But at the core, everybody's pretty simple, and then you expand from there. I mean, there's only so many plays, ways to run the football. Everybody does pretty much the same thing that way. But where are your tweaks off of that? How do you still get the simplicity but make it complex? How do you gain an advantage from the simplicity? I think everybody does that. They just then expand off of all of that, right? And, you know, but for us, I think formations help us create advantage with numbers. And just like, you know, Purdue's going to do against our defense. They're going to look for an advantage. They're going to look for advantages. They're going to look for tendencies. They're going to look for ways to be able to maybe things we haven't seen yet and make us forced to line up to things we haven't seen. I mean, that's part of football. That's part of that chess match. And that's what we do throughout the week.
What have you seen from Charlie Jones on tape that makes him so good?
He's just such an active receiver. He does everything really well, blocks well. He can play running back. If you put him in the backfield, he'd be a really good running back as well. He plays incredibly strong. He plays way above how big he is. He catches the ball contested, maybe better than maybe as good as anybody in the Big Ten right now. And he's complete. I mean, he's always competitive. And here's the thing: you watch him as a punt returner, and you'll get to know his personality. He doesn't ever fair catch the ball. Doesn't matter who's around, doesn't matter how high the hang time is, doesn't matter if the ball's short, long, he doesn't fair catch the ball. He's fearless, and he plays that way. And I got a ton of respect for him and what he's done throughout his career, you know, at Iowa, at Purdue, and he's picked up where he's left off. I mean, he's one of the best receivers in the conference, and he plays the game the right way. I mean, he's a fearless competitor, and it just yells at you off the screen, and you can see it.
What's your defense? There's always multiple guys around the ball making the tackle. Is that a habit that just develops over time?
Well, it's, you know, trained behavior, right? Becomes boring habits, and then boring habits create elite instincts. Well, we all have this trained behavior, and if we want something different, we want to break a trained behavior that we have. Well, if you want to do that, you got to get in the boring stage, right? And some of us make it through the boring stage, and you break boring, and you change your best, and you challenge yourself every day, and then boom, you're going to create an elite instinct. If you get to the boring stage, you're like, it's not worth it, and you quit, then your instinct is going to be a bad instinct, a lazy instinct. So it's an instinct that we've created because we do it every single day in practice. It's something culturally that if we don't do it, the entire practice shuts down. Okay, and then I got to get on the microphone, and I've got to be able to explain how important swarming to the ball is. But we work on our swarm defense. We talk about it. We emphasize it. It's a standard. Things that are true standards, no matter what, when they happen against the standard, everything shuts down in the organization. And that is emphasized and explained again why that's so important. Now, you can get to the point in the boring habit stage 10 years into it, like, he'll never get it. He'll never understand it. Or you could say, nope, we're going to stop it because the standard is the standard. And so Joe Rossi does a really good job and his defensive staff and our defensive coaches of emphasizing it. And we have to do it to be successful, and our players want to do it. And that's where that maturity shows up in our football team, because I've seen football teams and have coached football teams that they have to do it, but not everybody swarms, and you don't have as much success. But again, that's just a piece of it. That doesn't promise you you're going to have success because you do that, but it gives you a better chance to be around the football. You know, I mean, we punch the ball out down there in the green zone, and the ball takes one bounce, and boom, Justin Wally, who's being blocked, actually sets the edge. Right, turns the opposite way, and when he turns around, because he's moving towards the ball and swarming to the ball, he doesn't even know where the ball is. He just turns around and runs. Ball hits him right in the hands, picks it up, and we have a fumble recovery. So, again, that's that trained behavior, boring instinct. What we do in that boring instinct, or that boring habit stage, I should say, creates whatever instincts we're going to have, right, as a human being. So we're constantly fighting human nature daily, and that's what I mean by that.
Looking forward to seeing what a stripe battle look like on Saturday.
I'm just excited, yeah, to be back in Huntington Bank Stadium. Period. You know, like I said, our job is it's a game for us. You know, we've got to find a way to put the best plan together, become 1-0 against a really good Purdue team. Period. That we respect wholeheartedly, and they're a really good team, really well coached, and always have great game plans against us. But we have incredible fans, and I hope everybody knows what section they're in. They know exactly what to wear. And, you know, Grimmie will help you. JG's actually said that he'll help too, you know, and if you just I don't know, go on his Twitter handle or whatever it is. He'll get you a shirt if you don't, if you can't provide it. He said he'll help him out. I'm sure Grimm will do the same thing. But it's just, there's fan bases. That's what creates energy in college football. That's what makes the NFL so special, is the fan bases. You know, that's what makes this so fun. You know, we played in crowds when there were zero people in the stadium in 2020. It was a very different experience, right? And I think everybody can share that. And I don't think that's happened in the course of my lifetime. So when you look at that, you truly, hopefully our fans have a better appreciation of going to games and what atmosphere they can create all over the country. I'm sure Purdue feels that about their fans too, and the environment they create there. And the Vikings at home. I mean, that's what it's all about. So hope everybody has a great time with it and really buys into it and has a great time with it.
Daniel Jackson had a couple splash plays on Saturday. What has he been doing behind the scenes, and how much was it for him to overcome that injury that he had?
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing this now for 2 years. It's just we haven't just got him on the field consistently with some health deals. But other than that, I mean, he's been great. I mean, he's been showing us that all the time. I mean, he had a tremendous training camp up to the point he got hurt. But that's what he's been doing. So there's nothing new. It wasn't like he went in there and like, oh, I wonder what this guy's going to do. You knew exactly what he was going to do and the confidence Tanner has in him and Kirk has in him and the team has in him. But again, we had 10 different guys catch a pass last game, and that has to be what we are. And for this particular team to be really successful. And that's the DNA of this team. And it's that next man up mentality, and they're ready for their roles when the pressure of the situation creates itself.
Is your offensive line with so many new starters, do you think, gelled faster than you might have guessed?
Well, again, I think I said this before, nothing surprises me anymore in college football, but we have demands and we have expectations and we have standards that we create as coaches amongst ourselves of what we need to look like, and that's when you start in January. Remember, this team building starts in January. You go away from the bowl game for a little bit. You go out recruiting. You come back. Your team really starts when you're still on the road. They're back in the weight room. You have a big team meeting to kind of kick it off towards the middle to the end of January of this is what we need to do. Same thing with the staff. This is where maybe our strengths are going to be, and we got to make them better. This is where we're going to be a little thinner or maybe a little less inexperienced or a little more inexperienced. We've got to create that. Here's the challenges we have, and this is what we could see down the road, but this is where we have to be. And so you start at the end, work your way back. This is where we want to be. Here's the plan to be able to go get that every day, breaking the boring, every day being completely different. So it doesn't shock me that they're gelling together because they hung around each other all offseason. John Michael Schmitz came back to connect all of them. He's one of the best leaders I've ever been around, and he's creating more leaders. He's not creating followers to follow him. He's creating way more leaders like Tanner has done. And we have so many guys I can say that about on this team. But that doesn't surprise me because of how much they're actually around each other on the field and off the field. And that's how you really gel. If you just hang around each other at practice, I mean, you're only going to get to know somebody at a surface level, athletic level, and that's about it.
PJ.
Always nice to gel, always more enjoyable when you win, and when you throw up stats like this. After four games, Minnesota has punted three times, allowed three trips from the opposition into the red zone. On third down, they've converted on 79% among the nation's best, and its defense is giving up just 14% on third down. As a matter of fact, those stats aren't among the top in the nation. They are all number one in the country. You want a taste of the Twin Cities? Saturday, we're all Big Ten all morning. Previews of every conference matchup and tons of fun directly from Minneapolis. Big Ten tailgate presented by Range Rover Sports. Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, only on Big Ten Network and the Fox Sports app. Purdue will be there after a hard-fought victory over FAU. Not exactly the exact score that most people expected, but it is still a win in the right column for the Boilermakers. Of course, Purdue has alternated losses and wins since the start of the year, sitting at 2-2 as they make an awfully tough road trip to Minneapolis to visit the Gophers. The man who will lead that charge, Purdue head man Jeff Fromm now from West Lafayette.
Well, we're definitely excited to go on the road and play a really good football team that's currently ranked and deservedly so. No one's really come close to them. They've dominated in four games. When people have scored, it's been against the backups at the end of the game. So this team is really playing efficient football right now. Great running game, big offensive lineman, experienced running back, big tight ends, sixth or seventh year quarterback that runs their offense very, very well. Defensively, very sound, physical up front, experience in the secondary, really good linebackers. They're definitely doing a very good job. We got to credit their team right now. Really, really solid football in Big Ten fashion with great defense and a solid running game. So, we understand this is a tough matchup. We're going to have to do a lot of things right. We're going to have to find ways to get scores and take advantage of possessions, get some stops on defense. And once again, the key is can we find a way to get a lead and take them out of what they really want to do will be important. But our guys will work hard. We understand the challenge, but that's Big Ten football and our schedule, and our guys will work well this week.
Just injury updated to start the week. What's the status of Aiden and the other guys that missed Saturday's game?
Well, we have a few, so you have to give me exact names. Aiden, we'll see later on in the week where that's at.
Timetable on Jalen, any chance this week?
That one we'll have to see later on the week as well.
King and Brock and Cam and Reese?
Brock and Cam are doubtful. Reese, we'll see later in the week. And King, we'll see later in the week.
With Reese being out Saturday, how much stress did that put on the cornerback position?
Well, I do think it. We played our corners every snap. It was a little bit much. We got to figure out ways to get relief for them. We've asked them to do a whole lot in one-on-one coverage, which I think we're going to have to figure out ways to get better answers for that as well, because they were getting tired. And building depth is important. Gaining trust of your players to be put out there is important. So there's a lot of things we got to work on there.
Who would be other options at cornerback?
Well, right now, Brandon Callaway would be the next one in. And then Bryce Hampton has played a lot of positions for us. He would be next after that.
Follow up to what you said Saturday, that Aiden suffered his injury in the first quarter at Syracuse. Correct?
Yes.
How did he make it through the game and have the effective game that he had?
Well, I don't want to disclose what his injury is for his safety. So, a lot of times when you get injured during a game, you got adrenaline and then you're able to play through it. And it's not till later on do you feel sore, and then you get things checked and they diagnose what it is and you have to adapt. So I think that – probably is more common than you think, unless it's extremely, extremely severe that you can't play with. So I just think, he's tough and he wanted to finish. He did a really good job in the Syracuse game.
If Aiden can't go this week, obviously Austin would be the guy, but would you look at getting Alamo back in there as well, trying to get him a series or two?
I think so. I think that